It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Inside Sources. Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.
Last Friday, the Biden administration announced new funding to address the very real, very prevalent opioid epidemic in the United States of America. You took out a solid chunk from that budget allocation, totaling almost $11 million. We wanted to look into what that funding will be used for specifically, what populations are going to be targeted, the impact, and how we all link arms and move forward on this crucial issue together. Very pleased to have joining us on the program Veronica Little, who is the State Opioid Treatment Program Administrator at the Utah Department of Health and Human Services. Veronica, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's jump into this. Obviously, the Biden-Harris administration announced that action funding and funding to address the overdose epidemic, particularly as it gets to things like fentanyl. Tell us what that looks like in terms of what came to the state of Utah and what the targets are. Who are we really trying to help? What's on the agenda?
Yeah, I am really excited that this is something that people are talking about more and more often, and we are very happy to receive additional funding. This is actually the fourth iteration of opioid funds that come to the states through SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration. Through this funding and these grant allocations, each of the states are able to address state-specific issues relating to overdose death. These dollars include opioid addiction and stimulant addiction services. And so really the focus of the grant funding is to look at the continuum of prevention, harm reduction, treatment, and recovery support services.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
We appreciate the fact that these funds come to states directly in order to be able to assess really our state-specific needs and be able to implement funding throughout our communities in different ways.
Yeah, I think that's such a crucial component to all of this, that you get it to the state in a block that you can then say, okay, here's where we are, here's the situation here in the state of Utah, here's how we can target, here's how we can have the greatest impact and the greatest results for the long haul. So give us some sense in terms of that breakdown. You mentioned that kind of broad brush in terms of what kinds of services are we looking at, preventative, recovery, and sustainability.
Absolutely. So if it's okay with you, I think the easiest way for me to explain it or to talk about it is to talk about programs that we are currently funding and how we are continuing to fund them in the future. So some of the things that we currently work on with prevention, primary prevention is one of the areas that we focus on and talk about. So things like the Know Your Script campaign, talking about what opioids are, things to ask providers when they are prescribing an opioid or a stimulant, and learning really how to talk about and know what options there are available and what the concerns might be for having a prescription. We focus on things like harm reduction, things such as naloxone, the training of naloxone, how to use it, and then distribution. For those of you who don't know, naloxone is an opioid reversal medication that can be used to help overturn an overdose so that people can survive and live and continue to have healthy, productive lives. We provide funding for treatment services. One of the treatment services I think that's unique to this type of funding is programs such as the Bridge Program. It's a clinic that is currently we're funding through the University of Utah, where individuals who are seeking medication-assisted treatment can go and get started on buprenorphine, and they are then able to stay in treatment there or be connected to community partners to be provided medications as they are also working on other forms of treatment. We also fund things like recovery support services. This can be anything from helping individuals with funding for housing all the way through to having recovery support coaches. So like people who can come and talk to individuals who are experiencing an overdose or who are struggling with addiction and help guide them, let them know what options they have, and give them somebody to contact and talk to who isn't necessarily somebody who's telling them they have to go to treatment or telling them that they don't have to. It's somebody who's just, who has lived experience, who can help guide them along their path. And then we have other innovative projects and things like that that we're doing, but that kind of gives you an overview of the different types of services.
Yeah, and so important. Each of those components is such a critical piece of the puzzle, depending on where someone is in that journey. One of the other things I wanted to ask you was some of those populations served in terms of that target. Obviously, this is impacting everything from young people to elderly people who are dealing with opioid dependence and addiction. Is there specific targets in terms of age or communities that you're going after with some of this funding?
Sure, that's a great question. Because of the array of services that we can fund with these dollars, we don't really have a target population as far as age goes. We can provide services to anybody at any age. We can provide the funding to our local authorities to do that as well. The main target for this grant funding is to ensure that people have access to treatment services, especially services that include FDA-approved medications for addiction treatment. So the majority of that would focus on 18 and older. However, medication-assisted treatment can be utilized for those under 18 as well.
Wonderful. And as you're looking at that, Veronica, what are some of the things that you wish we were talking about more in our communities? You see the full spectrum, obviously, in your role there, what's happening, what's working, why we continue to have these issues at such a high rate. What's part of that conversation that you think maybe we're missing or that we ought to really amplify or go at in a little more aggressive way?
Wow, that's a really tough question, because there is no one solution to this problem of substance use and overdose death that we have here in Utah, but also in our nation. I guess the one thing I think that it would be really helpful is for us to really help reduce the stigma of overdose, because drug overdose is the leading cause of injury death in Utah. The majority of those overdoses are with opioids and stimulants. And our rate in Utah for overdose has been incredibly high starting in 2000, and it remained significantly higher than average until 2015. At that point, we really peaked, and our overdoses have remained consistently high since then. The rest of the nation kind of just caught up more to where we were with our overdose deaths. And that's really scary. One of the things in Utah is that prescription overdoses have really been leading in the cause of overdose death, but that is now kind of plateauing. We've seen a dramatic increase, just like other states have, in methamphetamine-involved overdose deaths. It is actually exceeding those of opioid prescriptions. Again, oh, wow. Historically, that had been our leading cause of overdose death.
Right.
But now, methamphetamine is just as involved. And so we're grateful that this grant funding that came through also includes the funding to allow for the use of stimulant misuse and stimulant overdoses, because we want to make sure that we're attacking this holistically. It's not just one substance that is involved for most people. And really, anybody who takes an opioid, whether it's prescribed or not, is at risk for overdose.
Yeah, such an important conversation. Veronica Little is the State Opioid Treatment Program Administrator at the Utah Department of Health and Human Services. Great insight. This is a crucial conversation. We're going to keep coming back to it. Important funding, important things yet ahead. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.